The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the author of his brand new series. It's called Seven Wonders, The Colossus Rises. Now, this author has also been involved with writing for the best-selling series, 39 Clues. Peter Larangas, he's back. Peter, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
All right, now, Seven Wonders, this is a brand new series. Talk to me about this series, the characters in it, and what they do, because they have some marvelous powers. And
that's right.
Here in the beginning, we don't know about one of them too much, though.
That's right. Well, Jack McKinley is the lead character of the book, and he wakes up one morning, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the school day, finds out that he's been whisked away to a secret island. And on this island are three other kids, and all four of them share this genetic trait. And if they're going to survive to their 14th birthday, they've actually got to go and find seven objects that were hidden in the that were actually taken from the ancient civilization of Atlantis and hidden centuries ago in the seven wonders of the ancient world. The problem is that six of those wonders no longer exist. But they've got to get those seven objects. They're called loculi. They've got to bring them back to that island in order to save their lives. And then they find out it's also in order to save the world.
Because there are others. There's another group also looking for these items.
That's right. That's right. There's another group called the Massa. It turns out that the group that they're affiliated with now is this incredible collection of scientists called the Karai Institute. And there's this war going on between the Karai and the Massa. And we don't know exactly who to trust and what their motives are.
Marco, he's been there a while, I believe. He has a fantastic power of basketball.
Yeah. Each of these kids has, imagine, you know, everybody's got a strength, right? So each of these kids has one, and Marco is the athlete. And Allie, another one of the kids, is a real tech genius. She's just managed to hack into the system of the United States government at age 9. And instead of jailing this little girl, they hired her. So that's her talent. And Cass, who's the other one there, he's one of these kids who can just memorize maps. I mean, you name a town, you say Tampa, Florida, and he will give you the route. Road by road. He knows how to do that. Everybody's got this talent. And what happens, what their genetic trait does, it is allows them to develop that talent to like an almost, superhuman capacity. So there's these kids who have the potential each to be almost superheroes. And then you get Jack. And Jack, you know, I mean, he's a smart kid. You know, he can sort of, at the beginning of the book, he sets up this crazy alarm that wakes him up by ejecting a toy dinosaur onto the wall. And the only problem is it hits him in the head. But, you know, and he's a little bit of a goofy kid, and he just has no idea what his talent is. And that's part of the mystery of the book, too, is figuring out what that is.
The Seven Wonders, a series of seven books?
It'll be seven books, yeah. And we decided that the books are coming out every 9 months, and it's a long time for a reader to wait. So we decided that in between each book, I'm gonna write an e-book. So kind of, give the readers a little something extra. There's always a little something in the plot where you say, wow, wouldn't it be cool to go deeper into that? You know, what is that all about? We're going to take those little parts of the plot and actually expand them in these e-books. They'll only be like 40, 50, 60 pages. And we went ahead and did the first one before the first book. It's called The Select, and it's available as a free ebook. You can download it from there's actually a website that the series has. It's called sevenwondersbooks.com. And when you go there, you can, download that ebook for free. And there'll be one in between each book also. So seven books and then seven little extras in between each. So altogether, 14, I suppose.
So if I go there right now, I can download that on my e-reader.
Absolutely.
And I can kind of find out about maybe where Seven Wonders started, in a sense?
Yeah, that's what we did and why we made it into a prequel, because as they start discovering how this whole thing came about, they find this little secret split rock that has a message, and it refers to something that happened back in the 19th century when this island was first discovered. Well, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to go back and actually tell that story of how the island was discovered? And that's what we did. I wrote this ebook, and we decided to rush it into print before the first book.
Well, I know with Seven Wonders, I read this and it's just a page turner. I just want to keep going on it. You know, this ebook, free ebook, I could have looked at that. I could have even salivated more for Seven Wonders.
Well, you're going to have to do that after we leave. I can see you going online and getting it. Actually, you know, the cool thing is you don't have to read that prequel in order to appreciate the book. But if you like the book, hey, I just invite you to do it. Let me know what you think.
A lot of times with books, you know, you get to the end of the chapter and you can say, okay, you know, it's getting kind of late. I can, you know, maybe hop off to bed or something, or maybe go eat or do what I have to do. But with this book, it's set up so I just want to keep going. You have like a lot of cliffhangers at the end of a lot of these chapters.
Yeah, that cliffhangers, they're like, you know, we children's book writers, those are like our stock in trade. You know, we love cliffhangers because readers love cliffhangers. I know when I was a kid, you know, I used to take a little flashlight under my covers and, you know, I just wanted to know what happened in the second chapter. And as I got older, I just wanted to give that to my reader. So I'm glad I'm giving it to you, and I'm sorry if it's keeping you from going to sleep at night.
So why aren't adult books like this?
Oh, that's a good question. I think some of them are. I read some adult books that do that, but I don't know. This, I think, right now, I feel really, really lucky because I think that it's kind of a golden age for children's books and young adult books. There are a lot of really good writers out there. And I know for me, you know, I'm an adult and my diet of books is like half of it is books for grown-ups, but at least half of it is books for kids. And it's not just because I do it. It's because there's a lot of really good books out there, really good writing. And a lot of them use cliffhangers.
Well, why an A book? Would you kind of compare this maybe to like an Indiana Jones?
Yeah, actually, you know, Indiana Jones is one of my favorites. It is like Indiana Jones. It's got action, it's got adventure, and it's got fantasy. And, you know, I like fantasy, but I like it with some, you know, like heart-pounding stuff. I just love. I mean, I love being in a movie theater and being so excited that I'm jumping out of my seat. You know, when I watched, I think it was Jurassic Park, maybe? It was so exciting. I had my foot up between the seats in front of me, and the, you know, one action scene was so shocking to me, I twisted my ankle. I shouldn't have done that. You know, I shouldn't have had my foot up there, but I like that. You know, I like heart-stopping action. It's really fun.
Seven Wonders, The Colossus Rises. This thing, so full of action, and it's so visual. How do you do something like that? Some books aren't as visual as others, but this one here, it's like being there.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you. I like painting pictures. I like imagining that I'm actually seeing it. And I like being really, really clear because kids demand that. If they can't picture what's going on, you know, they tune out. And I know when I was raising my two boys, we read to them every single night. And I saw when they were starting to fade away, when I would read books where you didn't really know where you were. And you gotta do it pretty quickly because if you have too much description, that tunes out that kid, and they're not that interested in every little detail, but you got to pick out the ones that are really dramatic, that'll really make the kid feel as if they're watching a movie. And then once you do that, you get off and you go into the plot and you go into the characters, but you leave them with a feeling like they've left their bedrooms and they're now in this incredible environment. That's what it's all about. And I'm glad, thank you. I'm glad that it works that way.
I guess you have to leave some to the imagination of the reader.
Absolutely. But you have to pique that imagination first. You have to get the imagination going. And then once you know the imagination is going, then you get off it. You don't want to give too much because every kid, every reader is going to take it in his or her own direction. It's one of the beauties of reading as opposed to movies and TV is that you're not giving them everything. You're letting them supply it for themselves, too.
When Jack first finds out he's been abducted, in a sense, he's a little worried. He kind of has maybe a sense that this isn't as it should be. You know, somebody took him away from his parents. Tell me a little bit about the doctor who is pretty much leading the kids, the lead doctor in this.
Well, so here's the thing. You know, when you grow up, you don't always know as you're getting into your teens, right? You know you're eventually going to be an adult, but you're not exactly sure who to trust and who not to, right? I mean, you've been with your parents your whole life, and now you're sort of opening up to the world. And this is kind of what's happening here, but on a much larger scale. So you got this guy, this doctor, Dr. Begad, and he's saying, hey, I'm going to save your life. And, oh, by the way, I took you away from your home, and your parents don't know. But trust me, this is going to be the best thing for you. Well, how are you going to trust somebody like that? On the one hand, they're making a pretty good case for the fact that they're saving your life, and you better listen to what he says because you want to live. But on the other hand, how can you trust somebody who isn't telling anybody back home? And he's got all kinds of reasons. Well, we can't let them know back home because they're going to take you away. And if they take you away, you're not going to live past the age of 14. So, you know, trust us, trust us, trust us. That's one of the big questions. How do you trust somebody? And it's a big question of youth, and it's a big question of literature. And I like the fact that the reader is trying to figure this all out with the characters.
There's a show called Man from U.N.C.L.E., and it almost seems like it's the good against the evil, and they have that whole scenario there with the good and the bad.
That's
pretty much what Seven Wonders is.
Yeah, and, you know, I grew up watching a lot of those shows. I grew up watching The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Lost in Space and all these kinds of old TV shows where, at that time, you know, Star Trek, right, where... You know, there were these constant questions about what happens when the world changes. You know, who do you ally yourself with? And we're in one of those situations now. Everything is changing. You know, with the electronic revolution, you know, life is a lot more insecure now. You know, maybe parents are losing their jobs, and so the lives of kids are being affected. And the electronic revolution is making a gap between parents and children. So there's constant, so much stuff to navigate. And I think, you know, literature is a way to investigate all this stuff in a safe way so that kids can sort of work it out with other characters, and maybe it'll take away from some of the confusion in their own lives.
Colossus Rising. What does that mean, the Colossus Rising?
The Seven Wonders of the Ancient World are something that I've really been kind of obsessed with over the years. And one of them is the Colossus of Rhodes. And this was this statue that straddled the harbor in Rhodes, which is this island in Greece, which I happened to visit many years ago. And as I was sitting in a cafe, I was wondering, how could they have built this thing? I mean, the ships were supposed to have passed underneath it, which meant that it must have been the size of, you know, 10 or 20 Statues of Liberty, which seems impossible to build back in the ancient times. So I started thinking about the seven ancient wonders and saying, well, what made them so wonderful, and why seven, and why did they choose them? And I just thought, wouldn't it be cool to set an adventure in that world? So I've been thinking about this for a while, and as I was working on the 39 clues, I had to do so much historical research and so much research into places in the world that I had never been. So I became kind of a real research fanatic. It just makes all your stories come to life to do this. And I started thinking about Seven Wonders, and eventually I thought, let me try it. Let me try to do something based on this. So I came up with this adventure, and I'm going to be taking the kids on a journey all over the place to find these things.
So the Seven Wonders of the World is basically where you're going to be visiting with Seven Wonders and other books in this series.
Right. So because the Seven Wonders, because only one of them still exists, which is the Pyramid of Giza, we've got to find these other six. So that's where kind of magical element comes in. And the Colossus of Rhodes actually makes an appearance in this book. So this is part of the action and part of the mystery and part of what takes it from the ordinary world into something absolutely fantastic.
Peter, it sounds like you've had an interesting life. Tell me a little bit about your marathon experience. It sounds like you've run at least one.
Yeah. I love running. Every morning, well, I live in New York City, and I work in the same apartment building where I live. So if I didn't do that, I'd just sit all day long. And I try to get up every morning. I live right near Central Park, so I like to say I have an 800-acre backyard. And I run. I love running. And I ran a marathon. I did it once. I didn't want to do it again. But I managed to get it in under 4 hours. So I was very proud of myself. And it's just, for me, running is something that frees up my mind. I can sort of think about books. I can think about my life. And I'm done. And my mind is fresh. And I get right to work.
Seems like with all the books that you've written, it's, you know, when do you find the time to run and train, and what was the training for that marathon for you?
I ran 10 miles a day, and on the weekend I ran 20. I had one day where I ran 20 miles, and in a way I think that was overtraining, believe it or not. And it didn't take that long. I mean, it was maybe an hour and a half a day, except for those really long runs. But it was a lot it was a lot of time. My wife told me it was a lot of time. And so that's why I don't do it anymore. So now I'm more a 4 to 6 mile a day kind of a guy.
If I ran 10 miles a day, I think I would just stay in my easy chair the rest of the day. But that would kind of defeat the purpose. All right. Now, Broadway, a Broadway actor.
Yep.
Tell me about that. What were you in?
Well, I was in a show called They're Playing Our Song. I did it on Broadway with Lucy Arnaz, who is the daughter of I Love Lucy, right? And I took it on the road, and I did the first national tour, which starred a wonderful actor, Victor Garber, who's in a lot of TV shows these days. So I did that for years, and that was because the two things I ever wanted to do in my life were performing on stage and writing. And when you grow up, a lot of times you get a lot of feedback that says you can't. It's not a way to make a living. You got to do something more legitimate. So I had that message in my head when I went to college, and I figured, well, you know, college is an investment. I got to do something really, you know, mainstream. So I majored in biochemistry, and all my roommates became doctors, and I didn't really want to do that. So I figured, well, I should probably go to law school. So after college, I worked in a law firm, and I took the law boards, and I got into law school, and I thought, do I really want to do this? And I thought, actually, no. So I forced myself to go to an audition. I got the job. I started my career in the theater. I did that for 8 years. I did the Broadway show, and I did a lot of regional theater and summer stock, you know, and in between acting jobs, I tried to wait on tables, and I kept getting fired. So I was not a very good waiter. And I started editing books freelance just to make some money in between acting jobs. And I went back to the thing that I loved most, which was writing, through that job. So for a while I was writing books, I was editing books, and I was acting all at the same time. And eventually when you do stuff like that, you know, you have to come to a place in your life where you pick one. And the writing was really, really the thing that was making me feel alive, and I was getting some good feedback. And after about 8 years of doing the theater, I switched, and I haven't looked back ever since.
Sounds like the tips weren't too good with the people probably wearing their food instead of eating it.
Yeah, there was that. And there was also, you know, for me, it was you know, when you're writing a book, you know, you're writing a story where the life is in the balance. When you're on stage, you've got to perform at your absolute peak. When you're waiting on tables, if someone says to you, I need another lemon, it's for me, it was a little hard to care that much, and maybe my heart wasn't in it.
Lucy Arnaz, a name I haven't heard for like a long time. Is she still acting?
You know, I think she is. I think she is. I think she's still acting. I don't know for sure, because I haven't seen her name that much, but believe she's still doing roles. Also, Robert Klein was playing opposite her, and then Tony Roberts took over from him. Those two guys I know are still out there.
Wow. All right. Now, of course, married, your wife into jazz, a musician. Tell me about that. She's had some pretty famous songs out there, too.
Yeah, my wife is an amazing singer-songwriter and pianist. She can do it all. She wrote a song called If I Close My Eyes, which was sung by a singer named Raina, which climbed up the dance charts and did really well. It was one of the best-selling dance songs of its time. A few years ago now, but people still talk about it, and you still hear it being played. It was covered by a bunch of different people. She also wrote a song called Adore You, which made a huge hit on the gospel and Christian charts, and got nominated for a Dove Award. And she's constantly writing music still. She's developing songs into, we hope, a Broadway musical as we speak. And she has two CDs of music that's all about motherhood. And it's not sort of, some of the songs are very funny, but a lot of them are very deeply emotional. And moms and dads who listen to these songs just are transported. They're very, very affecting and dramatic. And she's done very well with that. Now, she also performs in New York on the weekends at the Carlisle Hotel and the Setai. So she's got performing skills that are incredible. So it's been quite an interesting life because she's constantly writing new songs and making demos and traveling around. And now we have a son who was also a musician and actually who was in a local band called Walk the Moon for a while, and they co-wrote their song Anna Sun. So we've got a very musical family.
All right, now, if I wanted to find out more about Tina, I'm sure she's got a website out there.
She's got a website, tinadevaron.com. It's got all the information about her music.
So what's that like, somebody that writes music, lyrics, and the author living in the same house? Do you guys bounce ideas off each other?
Absolutely. She's always sending me lyrics to her songs. I'm not as much of a judge about the music itself, which to me is magic. She knows everything she does, I think, is wonderful. The lyrics, since I'm a writer, I can always give her feedback, and that's worked out really nicely. And sometimes we do things together, usually, silly songs that we do for people's birthdays and things like that, because that's about my level. She's got a much better handle on writing lyrics. We're both creative, and because our fields are different, I'm a book writer and she's a songwriter. It's different enough so that we're not constantly headbutting about this and that, but it's similar enough that we can help each other and be each other's best supporters. It works out nicely, and we're both home all the time. So we see each other, and we were there for our kids as they were growing up. And that's one of the things that, to me, if I were to say, is my life successful or not, I would say the measure of the success is the fact that I was able to spend so much time with my family as they were growing up.
For Seven Wonders, I've seen a map, kind of a green map that maps things out. Do you have that at your house on the wall? Is that how you would happen to write so you know where you've been, where you're going? How does all this work?
I've got that all in my head, but when they came out with that map, I thought, oh man, that's just great. Yeah, I have that map in a very prominent place because it gives you a really good visual idea of where they were going. In fact, in book two, I actually used that map. They're trying to figure out where someone disappeared to, and trying to figure that out had a lot to do with how far away these things were. And having that map in front of me made me think, okay, well, in order to get from there to there, he'd have to cross over the ocean. But in order to get to there, and I had a real idea of how close these things were. So yeah, the map is fantastic. And also it's actually, map is also on the sevenwondersbooks.com. You can get a version of it, and it's cool. It's great.
Peter, I know you mentioned in the 39 Clues series, when you were writing books there along with other authors doing that, you did a lot of research on the books. How much research have you done on the Colossus Rising, and maybe how much research are you going to do on the other books in the series?
Oh, a lot, because there's two kinds. Now, the kids have to actually go to these places to find the Seven Wonders, even though they don't exist, you got to sort of figure out where the ruins would be and how to get them. So I've got to do a lot of contemporary research, find out exactly. I mean, if I've been to the place, that helps. I have been to Rhodes, so I have an idea of what the place is like. But I may not have been to some of the other places, so I've got to do a lot of research of what the world is like now there. But the world was a lot different back when these wonders were built. So I've got to also do the historical research. And if there's any kind of, a passage between time or something that I want to write about that happened years ago, I've got to be able to picture it as if I'm there now. So, those are just two different kinds of research, one that's a little harder than the other. And I did a lot of that for the 39 Clues, and it's almost the same kind of research I'm going to be doing for this. So I feel like I've had good training.
The next book in the series, what?
Next book is called Lost in Babylon. And I thought that was a great big secret. And then I discovered that there's a page at the end of the book that actually has that title in the cover. So yeah, it's Lost in Babylon. I don't want to give away too much because there are some awesome twists, plot twists that happen in that book. I just finished writing my first draft of it. So we're now doing revisions, and that's getting very exciting.
All right, now, Seven Wonders, of course, The Colossus Rises, out right now in hardcover. If I want to find out more about Peter Larangas, the wife, kids, I mean, all the bios on the website, I'm sure, right?
The bios on the website, that's right. It's actually on my website, which is peterlarangas.com, and it's also on the Seven Wonders books.com website. So my website has all kinds of biographical information and silly photographs and a link to where I'm touring, because right now I'm in the middle of a 15-city tour.
Wow, it's really a tough life, fun. But somebody has to do it, right?
Yeah, someone has to do it.
Now, are you writing while you're on the road also, or is it pretty much all a leisure type thing?
Oh, no, it's I am writing when I'm on the road. I'm revising the second book. And I do a lot of events. I like to pile it on. So a typical day for me is three or four events. I visit schools, I visit bookstores, and and then I get back to the hotel and write.
All right, Seven Wonders. You know, it's just not for kids, even though it's a YNA book. Your son, daughter are going to love this. You're going to love it also. Seven Wonders, follow these kids on a journey. They don't really know what's happening, and you may have to find out later on the book, or maybe the next book, or maybe by book seven, what really happens. You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Peter Larangas, author of his brand new book, Seven Wonders, The Colossus Rising. Peter, thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.